Earlier this week, a retired British Army officer explained that he and his wife weren't getting on too well with a few members of his immediate family.
I had 3 conversations with my grandmother and 2 conversations with my father before he stopped taking my calls.
Alert listeners will already have spotted what we're doing here, which is to say that, yes, this is going to be one of those things where a highfalutin media outlet rises piously above commenting directly on the actual thing and instead loftily pontificates over steepled fingers about what it all means. Before we get too superciliously anthropological about the teeth gnashing and garment rending currently besetting Britain, this does seem a good time to recognise a truth rarely acknowledged by the media, which is that most people don't really care about most things. Doubtless there are many millions of subjects of these sceptred isles who responded to Oprah Winfrey's interview with the Duke and Duchess of Sussex in the sane and proper manner, i.e. by muttering, huh, and proceeding with their day.
We're smiling and doing our job, but we're both just trying to hold on.
Welcome to the Great British Bake Off.
But, and watch us now eat a nice big slice of that cake which we are also having, when a substantial or at least voluble demographic of a given country freaks all the way out about a given thing, it assuredly means something, if often nothing good.
I'm angry to the point of bawling over today. I'm sickened by what I've just had to watch.
At which, and yes, a point will be arriving shortly, hang in there, we should also be clear regarding which specific given country we're talking about. Because this isn't really about the United Kingdom or even Great Britain. There is pretty solidly entrenched resentment of the royal family in Wales and Scotland.
That they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
And obviously outright hostility in portions of Northern Ireland. What we are witnessing is a certain segment of England having a nervous breakdown about history, identity and tradition, which may remind you of a recent referendum and several ensuing years of epically tedious political melodrama.
The country's in a total mess and we need to have our own independence, and it'll be hard at first, I think.
Post-interview polling does indeed suggest a congruence between views on this latest royal-related hullabaloo and views on Brexit. Those who voted Leave are overwhelmingly unsympathetic to the Duke and Duchess. Those who voted Remain more understanding, but also much likelier still to be undecided or uninterested. Also, as with Brexit, views sorted by age break absolutely as you'd expect. Where one strata of England is concerned, it's hard not to see a certain displaced anxiety in play here. At some point in the next few years, a different face will begin appearing on British stamps and banknotes. It is difficult to overstate how strange this will be. Queen Elizabeth II has reigned for 69 years, a stolid and reliable fixture during a period in which her country and its role in the world has otherwise changed beyond recognition, as may be gauged by, among many other metrics, comparing her first Prime Minister, Winston Churchill,
"We shall fight on the beaches,"
with the rather less august figure likely to be her last,
"We'd have had the consolation of watching the Speaker being forced to eat a kangaroo testicle."
Or by noting that her father, King George VI, also answered to the title of Emperor of India. Nevertheless, while so much else about Britain has been utterly transformed, there is, outside those aforementioned portions of Northern Ireland which have other ambitions, negligible serious republican sentiment at large in UK politics. Whether they realise it or not, those English people happier in the past than the present may already have begun to grieve. They may also have taken Prince Harry's recent decisions personally. Harry, surely, was supposed to be their guy, the Jack the Laddish roisterer who later served his country's military with distinction fighting the Taliban in Afghanistan, now married to some foreign actress and talking about his feelings to Americans. But indulging which and other theories besides that recent events have stirred up such potent folk myths as Princess Diana and Edward VIII, for example, may be to overthink it. Many astute chroniclers of England's foibles, Evelyn Waugh not least among them, have posited that the real, if rarely admitted, attitude of the English to royal scandal is one of enthralled, unbridled, agog enjoyment. While we're thinking about Venn diagrams of opinion, there has always been a sprawling overlap between those who righteously decry the spite, prurience and pettiness of Britain's tabloid media and those who consume it most avidly. Therefore, it may be apposite to cede the last words to Thomas Babington Macaulay, the 19th century historian and politician. He was writing about a merely aristocratic brouhaha, involving Lord Byron, as they often did at the time, rather than a royal one, but his point holds. Once in 6 or 7 years, Macaulay jeered, our virtue becomes outrageous. We cannot suffer the laws of religion and decency to be violated. We must make a stand against vice. Macaulay prefaced this mock horror with the observation, we know no spectacle so ridiculous as the British public in one of its periodical fits of morality. For Monocle 24, I'm Andrew Muller.